400 years after the birth of John Milton, he still lives. His example still inspires. His words still echo. Last year, I think it was last year or the year before, I saw a performance of a play based on Paradise Lost in the Oxford Playhouse. The year before, a version of the poem adapted for children by Nancy Willard was published in the United States. Last month, I spent an evening in Toronto talking to an Indian classical dancer, Janak Kendry, and his teacher, Professor Tulsi Ram Sharma, about the dance that Mr. Kendry was preparing based on, yes, Paradise Lost. It will not die, it will not go away. Paradise Lost is the great central work, of course, but Milton's life was far more than Paradise Lost, and this exhibition celebrates the rest of it as well. His political work, his writing of majestic pamphlets that still endure, the championing of liberty and the freedom of the press. Milton is our greatest public poet, the poet most profoundly engaged in all the work of the state, the most eloquent supporter of the English Republic. This exhibition is rightly called Citizen Milton, because it emphasizes something about the nature of the writer's responsibility. Milton never forgot that writers and poets are citizens too. As we look around this exhibition, which I was privileged to do an hour or two ago, we can see the extraordinary range of his concerns. Church organization, divorce, monarchy, censorship, and always and throughout the nature of the responsibilities of freedom. And he was all of a piece. He believed firmly that all men naturally were born free. And he argued in The Tenure of Kings and Magistrates that citizens should be governed by reason and not generally give up their understanding to a double tyranny of custom from without and blind affections within. The step from that firm and resolute republicanism to a delightful fairy tale of two happy people in a pretty garden with a tree and a snake might seem to be a long one. But, of course, the central story of Paradise Lost is precisely that of a rebellion against authority and its consequences. And it's natural, given the tendency of Milton's imaginative sympathies, that we should find a lot of truth in the famous declaration of William Blake, which also finds a place in the exhibition, that Milton was a true poet and of the devil's party without knowing it. In other words, in Blake's terms, the party of the imagination, of inspiration, of that energy which is eternal delight. It's seemed to more readers than Blake that the authority against which the attractive figure of Satan rebels deserves to be rebelled against. And here I can't help remembering a story which I heard once and I quoted before in a piece I wrote about Milton, but I can't find the source of it, so if anybody can tell me what it is, I'd be very grateful. It's an old squire of the hard-drinking, probably in the late 18th century, being read to by his more highly educated butler from Paradise Lost. And I picture the old boy sitting there with his gouty foot propped up on a stool and his fist clenched around a glass of port. And suddenly he bangs the arm of his chair and he says, "By God," he says, "by God, I know not what the outcome may be, but this Lucifer is a damned fine fellow and I hope he may win." But why the Bodleian? What's the connection, apart from the slight and trivial fact that this is one of the world's great libraries and naturally holds many items of Miltonic interest? Well, we've heard from Dr. Thomas already that the Bodleian Library has its heroic and, dare I say it, republican virtues too. After the Restoration, as we've heard, Milton's books were in danger. Books were condemned to be burned. Doubtless, all over the country, many copies were burned and went to the flames. Doubtless many libraries and booksellers in other parts of what was now a kingdom again, gave up their copies of his works to the local executioner or the contemporary equivalent of Alistair Campbell, perhaps, to be disposed of. But Bodley's librarian, John Rouse, had foreseen such an order and taken steps to make sure that Milton's poems and pamphlets would survive. And in a curious reversal of the normal cataloguing procedure, which aims to make books generally easy to find, he succeeded in hiding the items until the danger passed. I must say, there are some library catalogues I've used, not this one, which have taken Rouse's action and made it into a principle. And again, in 1683, the order went out from the convocation of the University of Oxford itself this time. not the university's finest hour, perhaps, but it was one of the Bodleian's finest hours, because again, Milton survived. It's not hard to see why the poetry still lives. It's the language. As W.H. Auden said in his poem On the Death of Yeats, time, which is intolerant of the brave and innocent, and indifferent in a week to a beautiful physique, worships language and forgives everyone by whom it lives. And Milton's command of the music of language, its sensuous qualities, its sound and rhythm and weight and texture, is hardly matched by any other English poet. We need to remember how to read poetry. Those of us, especially those of us who are concerned with education, we need to let it live in the mouth. We need to trust the ear. We need to give it permission to enchant as well as argue. But it's also Milton's example as a champion of intellectual freedom that we need more than ever these days. When a government is so mesmerized by the power of technology to collect endless quantities of information about us without having the slightest interest in judging its truthfulness, when it's so intoxicated by the sexiness of thinking that its opponents embody absolute evil, when it's so timorous that it makes victims of an 80-year-old man heckling at a party conference and a woman reading out at the cenotaph a list of soldiers and civilians killed in the Iraq war, and when it's so careless of the liberty of the citizen that it's now trying to hold people in custody for 6 weeks without even charging them, then we need to remember what liberty can mean and what a champion liberty had in John Milton. Milton thou shouldst be living at this hour, said Wordsworth. Well, Milton is living at this hour, living in the words he wrote, living in the minds of all those who are inspired by him, and living not least in this marvelous exhibition. Good for Milton. Good for the Bodleian Library. And I hope many, many people will come and see what this great Englishman did and why we should celebrate him still. It gives me enormous pleasure, and it's a great privilege to be able to declare the exhibition open. Thank you very much.